Cue the girls.
All together now. 1, 2, 3. Keep your mind on the drive and keep your hands on the wheel. Keep your snoopy eyes on the road ahead. We're having fun sitting in the back seat, kissing and a hugging with Fred.
All of them in love with Fred.
Not exactly rock and roll, Lonnie.
Wish that
not
I
quite.
Could be like Fred.
Poor baby. Well, I think everybody heard that little laugh in the background, and they knew that somebody was listening, and it happened to be that poor guy who was driving that car, and unfortunately, wasn't lucky.
Out to Fred.
Feel so bad for you, boy. That was a terrible situation.
No, don't feel bad for me, Ronnie, with seven little girls. That was really fun.
You did rather well with that recording, too.
Sure. It got me to stay in as a recording artist.
I should tell
people. Tell everybody
who we're talking to. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce the man who sang that recording, and he also wrote a lot of great hits as well. This is Mr. Paul Evans.
Nice introduction, Ronnie. And you are a very brave man to put me back on your show.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, because...
I know why you're saying that.
You know why I say it. When we were doing an interview, we were interrupted. We were taken off the air for a ball game.
That was a few years ago on a different radio station. I was all set to do an interview with you, Paul.
Right.
And the radio station threw in a Little League baseball game that had been postponed because of rain.
Right.
And unfortunately, they played the game very, very slow. And by the time the game was over, we could have only done a 15-minute show. Oh, that didn't work. Well, I have good news, Paul. There's no Little League baseball game tonight.
Oh, thank goodness.
That means we have to do a show now. So
let's go.
Paul, where were you originally from?
I am a New York City boy. I've lived here all my life.
And
I'm still living here.
You never moved out of New York City?
No. I was brought up in Queens, one of the boroughs of New York City, and once I moved into Manhattan, I stayed here forever. And it was very convenient for me for a lot of reasons. First of all, I spent most of my life in the studio, as you know, Ronnie. For me, it was a hop, skip, or a subway ride away from my apartment to the studios where I was doing backgrounds for other singers.
Yeah, back in those days, the subway rides were a lot less expensive.
I think I remember 15-cent subway rides. Uh-oh, that's a tip-off.
What is it now?
Now, it's a $2 ride.
But
you know what? It's fast. It gets you there. You just have to ignore the crowds.
Right, and you have a lot less money, but that's besides...
Well, that's true. But, you know, every once in a while, I hear somebody singing one of my songs. I've heard Seven Little Girls down in the subways. I've heard some of the songs that I've written down in the subways. So for me, it's a good place.
That's how you know that you've established yourself.
Yes.
Paul, your first hit recording came as a songwriter, and it was a song called When by a couple of guys who happened to be twins. Can you tell us about how that song came about?
Yes, I can. The twins were, of course, the Kalin twins, and unfortunately, Ronnie, I have to say that neither one is around anymore. They were twins. One of them, I guess it was last year, died in an auto accident, and the other twin died of really heartbreak about 3 months after that. Really terrible. But they were my first hit. They were terrific guys. As a matter of fact, they picked the song When. Up at the record label, you were assigned to certain producers, and they were assigned to a man named Jack Cleese. And we brought our song up to him, and he didn't like it, and he put it in a pile of rejected songs. But when they came to his office to pick a B-side for their record for him, he told them, go ahead, I'm not going to be there. Go into my pile of accepted records. They got into the pile of rejected records, and they picked out When. They walked into the wrong pile of records, and they pulled it out of there.
And they didn't know the difference.
Well, when he got back, I'm sure he was terribly embarrassed and certainly couldn't say anything to them. Hey, guys, I don't like that song. So instead of that, with a clave, he made a great, great arrangement.
We're going to listen to it right now. This was your first hit. This was the Kalin Twins, and it actually got to number 5 on the chart. This is When.
I don't want to ever say goodnight. I need you you will. I know all will be fine. When will you be mine?
Oh, baby, I'm in you. I want you, living. I love you. Yes, I do, and I hope you hear me.
Kalen Twins, and when we should point out that the Kalen Twins happened to be named Herbert and Harold. They were from Port Jervis, New York, and as Paul just mentioned, sadly, they are no longer around. Did you co-write the song with somebody, when?
I did, with Jack Reardon. Jack eventually wrote The Good Life, the big Tony Bennett song. You know, Harold, I guess, Kalen.
Yeah, I've heard him both.
His brother had passed away. He asked me if I would go on a show with him and sing When. I thought that would be very interesting to have one of the Kalen Twins and the writer of the song. I thought fans would really, you know, enjoy that. Unfortunately, there wasn't enough time. He, like I said, he passed away 3 months after his brother did.
That was When from the year 1958.
Oh, my God. Is that the truth?
You know how many years ago that was?
Oh, I don't, you know, yes.
50.
Oh, my gosh.
Hard to believe. Now, after you wrote that song, the question I'm
sure... Wait, Ron. I'm stunned. It was 50 years ago. God. Well, great. I'm still singing and still writing, and good. I'm proud of that.
Did I make you feel older, though?
Well, no. Nothing can make me feel older.
Okay. Now, after you had that hit, the next question was, when am I going to have another hit? The next big hit came as a recording artist with a song that you did not write.
That's correct.
And it's the one that kind of opened the show. We played the tail end of Seven Little Girls Sitting in the Backseat. What's the story with that song?
At the time, I was making what we might jokingly call a living by singing what we call demo records, demonstration records.
Mm-hmm.
Writers that couldn't sing well would have to hire a singer just to put maybe five instruments down, guitar, bass, piano, drums, four or five, maybe another guitar, and they'd have to hire a singer so that they could show the song for other artists. And these writers, Bob Hilliard and Lee Pockris, they brought this little demo over to Carlton Records for Merv Griffin. Is that amazing?
Yeah.
You wouldn't think that. Well, anyway, Joe Carlton, who ran the label, said, no, I'd like to put this record out. We're starting to do some rock and roll here at this little independent label, and I want that demo exactly the way I hear it. I don't want you to go back in and add any instruments, add any more singers. Just put the demo out. That's what they did. I had been paid originally $15 to do that song.
You did it with some girls.
I did it with two girls who were part of the Ray Charles Singers. Not the Ray Charles.
No, not the Ray Charles, Unchain My Heart.
No.
Stop Loving You.
This Ray Charles is the guy who put a chorale together for a lot of television shows.
Love Me With All Your Heart, he did. Hits.
Yes, yeah. They did have some hits. These girls were part of that chorale, and they were hired for the demo, and I liked them. They were very nice. They really were not pop-oriented at all. They were into more Rush kind of music, I suppose. And Joe Carlton, again, he decided he didn't want the girls group on the label. He wanted a solo teenage role star, and that was me.
Well, we do want to give the girls credit. Both of them were named Sue.
Yes, Sue Perry and Sue Singleton.
And they were known as the Curls.
Yes, and I think they eventually recorded for a label called Everest.
Anyway, we're going to listen to it right now, and this actually came out on the Guaranteed label.
Yes, which was a Carlton subsidiary.
Of course, with a name like that, it was guaranteed to be a hit. Paul Evans and the Curls with Seven Little Girls Sitting in the Back Seat.
Seven little girls sitting in the back seat, hugging and a kissing with Fred. I said, why don't one of you come up and sit beside me? And this is what the seven girls said.
All together now, one, two, three. Keep your mind on your driving, keep your hands on the wheel, keep your snoopy eyes on the road ahead. We're having fun, sitting in the back seat, kissing and a hugging with Fred.
Drove through the town, drove through the country, showed them how a motor could go. I said, how do you like my triple carburetor? And one of them whispered low.
All together now, one, two, three. Keep your mind on your driving, keep your hands on the wheel, keep your stupid eyes on the road ahead. We're having fun, sitting in the back seat, kissing and a-hugging with Fred.
I said, you don't need me, I'll get off at my house. And this is what the seven girls said.
All together now, one, two, three. Keep your mind on your driving, keep your hands on the wheel, keep your stupid eyes on the road ahead. We're having fun, sitting in the back seat, kissing and a-hugging with Fred.
All of them in love with Fred. Kissing and a-hugging with Fred. Wish that I could be like Fred.
All of them in love with Fred. Wish that you could be like Fred. What a great song. Did you do it in one take, or was it several takes?
Probably not too many. Again, it was a demo.
Yeah,
and
so who cares? You know, nobody's going to hear it except a few people, right?
That's right. And the object was to not spend a lot of money. They didn't want to take very much time.
That was a record that, believe it or not, became a master.
Yes, that's right.
And it got to number 9 on the chart, on Billboard, anyway.
On Billboard, right.
Number 9 in Billboard. That must have been a wonderful surprise for you. You remember the day that you saw your name on the record chart as a recording artist? That had to be a great surprise.
Sure. Well, the biggest surprise was the record was not due to come out till whatever, November, something like that, and I was lying in bed, just minding my own business in September sometime, and I heard the song on the radio, and I said, that sounds familiar. Oh my God, that's me! It came out before it was due to come out, and every time I switched stations, I heard it, and Ronnie, I knew immediately, of course, that it was a big, big hit.
Any rate, I'm Ronnie Allen talking to Paul Evans, and we're going to move on to the record that made you a two-hit wonder, which was Midnight Special, and I know you didn't write Midnight Special either.
Well, Midnight Special is an old Southern folk song about a prison. The legend in the prison in Texas, probably Houston, was that if the light from this train shone into your cell at the stroke of midnight, you'd be released, and therefore the title, Midnight Special.
Originally, I think it was done by Lead Belly.
Fogerty did it.
Yeah, Mr.
Later.
John Fogerty.
He was quoted as saying, it was simple, I always liked the Paul Evans record, and all I did was shake it up a little bit. I was flattered. That was very nice. About 6 months before my record was released, it was a big country hit by Wilma Lee and Stoney Cooper.
Wow.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful country record. I don't think they would have released it if they realized that this record, you know, was just out and it was a seller.
Maybe not, but had you heard theirs?
No, I heard it later. I mean, you know, I was so busy with Seven Little Girls, I didn't have time to hear anything.
Yeah, I think the original lyric to the song was, you're penitentiary bound, and I think you changed it to prison bound. It was a little bit easier to
say. Well, you know what? My sister was a folk singer, and she would appear at what they used to call hootenannies. And I heard her singing, and so really what I did was do her version. And the reason we did it, was that when I had seven little girls and I went on my first bus tour, I got on the bus and the road manager on the bus said to me, "What songs are you going to do?" And I said, "Songs?" And I have one arrangement, it's seven little girls. So Bobby Comstock, who had one big hit record, the Tennessee Waltz, Bobby was the band leader, and he said, "Well, don't worry about it. What songs do you sing?" And I said, "Well, I really do a lot of folk songs." And he said, "Well, play a couple." And I played a Midnight Special. He said, "Well, we can easily rock and roll that up."
This was your second hit, Paul, as a recording artist, Midnight Special.
Well, you wake up in the morning, boy. You hear the ding-dong ring. Then you look upon the table, boy. You see the same darn thing. You find no food upon the table, boy. There's no fork up in the pan. But you better not complain, boy. You get in trouble with the man. And the Midnight Special shine its light on me. Let the Midnight Special shine its ever-loving light on me. Well, yonder comes Miss Rosie, boss. How in the world do you know? By the way she wears her apron, boss, and the clothes she wore, the umbrella on her shoulder, piece of paper in her hand. Well, she come to see the governor. She wants to free her man. And the Midnight Special shine its light on me. Let the Midnight Special shine its ever-loving light on me. Now if you're ever in Houston, boss, well, you better do right. Hey, you better not gamble, boss. And you better not fight, for the sheriff will grab you, and the boys will pull you down. And the next thing you know, boss, you're prison bound. And the Midnight Special shine its light on me. Let the Midnight Special shine its ever-loving light on me.
Spell it Midnight, N-I-T-E, or spell it Midnight, N-I-G-H-T. Doesn't make any difference. It's still Midnight Special, Paul Evans, and a great recording of it. And it's kind of rock and roll, right?
Right, spell it as you will, yeah. Rock and roll.
Did you consider yourself as a rock and roll singer or just a pop singer back then?
I did consider myself a pop singer. Midnight Special was almost as funky as I could get. And in a way, I'm sorry I didn't stay in it. I love when I do my concerts, which isn't too often, Ronnie. It's difficult to get back into that circuit. I've been out of it in the studios for so long. But when I do Midnight Special, it's a special thrill because it is rock and roll. But, I mean, then we went back to a pop song for my third hit wonder.
Well, for your third one, which was Happy Go Lucky Me,
right.
you said to yourself, well, this is nice. I got one hit as a songwriter, two hits as a recording artist, but why can't I come up with a hit that I write myself?
And that's exactly right.
More money for you and me.
What happened? The publishing became an issue.
All right.
Record companies wanted a piece of publishing, so they really wanted to pick up artists that could write, and then they would share in the publishing.
But you laughed yourself into a big hit here.
I did, and it's very funny. There was a big writer around. He has since passed away. His name was Woody Harris, who had written with Bobby Darin and stuff. He heard me sing the song before I recorded it, and he said, "You know, Paul, you're lousing up that song by putting that laugh in there." Get out of here!
He wanted you to remove all the laughter?
Yes, he didn't like me laughing. That's what the whole song is all about.
I can laugh when things ain't funny. Happy-go-lucky me. Yeah, I can smile when I ain't got no money. Happy-go-lucky me. It may sound silly, but I don't care. I got the moonlight, I got the sun, I've got the stars above. Me and my Billy, well, we both share. A happy-go-happy, happy-go-lucky love. Well, life is sweet, whoa, sweet as honey. Happy-go-lucky me.
Happy-go-lucky me by happy-go-lucky Paul Evans. We're having a ball. Did you have a co-writer on happy-go-lucky me?
Yes, Al Byron. I wanted to tell you that happy-go-lucky me was featured in a John Waters film called Pecker, but he was quoted as saying happy-go-lucky me was a diabolically happy song.
I'm not going to argue with that.
No, it was. You couldn't get any happier than that.
No, it really was. We're moving right along. You were just having a wonderful time with all these hit records, and then all of a sudden you came up with a record that pretty much destroyed your career. That's what you told me anyway.
That was true.
Now, tell me about this particular recording. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do. And what happened was the label liked Bobby Darin style, you know, or Bobby had stepped out of rock and roll and became a finger snapper, you know, a very sophisticated, smooth guy. And so they were looking for something less rock and roll for me. Oh, my God, Ronnie, what a terrible era. It was a very good song called Brigade of Broken Hearts, but it really was not my style. And if I could take that one song back, I would do it. Even though it wasn't a bad song, it was just the style was incorrect for me. And it did hit the charts, but it was really pretty far down. It was not a great record for me, and it kind of ended my singing career for a while.
We want to point out what people should listen for. At the point in the record where you sing the blues, you kind of yodel.
I do. I can yodel. I remember when I appeared in the Philippines when I had Seven Little Girls and those records out, I found a little club nearby and was drinking an awful lot of beer. They found out I could yodel. And they made me get up on the stage and yodel, and I yodeled my voice out, and I had to do a show the next day. And that was the last time I drank a lot of beer for doing a show.
Okay, moving right along. Here is that record.
Yeah, let's get a vote on this song. Should I have done it or not?
Good question. And people could email me, ronnieoldiesguy@aol.com, and let me know what you think of Paul Evans and The Brigade of Broken Hearts.
The general is a man whose true love ran away. The colonel found his sweetheart in another's arms. The captain also learned that love just doesn't pay. And now that I have lost your charm, I think I'll join the brigade of broken hearts, where instead of reveille they play the blues. We've never won a war in the Battle of L'Amour, the brigade of broken hearts. You said you'd always love me and that I would be the only one whose arms would ever hold you near. But then last night your lips and arms deserted me. Here comes another volunteer. Sign up for the brigade of broken hearts, where instead of reveille they play the blues. Never won a war in the Battle of L'Amour, the brigade of broken hearts. Instead of rifles, they all carry handkerchiefs.
so they can wipe away each sad and lonely tear. I'd better get another dozen handkerchiefs. I'm the biggest loser of the year. I'm gonna join the brigade of broken hearts, where instead of reveille they play the blues. Never won a war in the battle of the Moor, the brigade of broken hearts.
Well, I'm waiting for all those emails to come in to let me know whether it should have ruined your career or not.
Well, right after that, I actually was drafted into the Army, so I suppose it didn't make much of a deal.
Oh, speaking of the Army, the next record we're going to play is by Elvis.
Oh, okay. Speaking of the Army, well, that's
a great segue. We didn't plan that. Okay.
Ronnie, I got to know what the next record is.
You just told me.
Oh. My first Elvis record.
I gotta know, but it wasn't supposed to be for Elvis, was it?
Well, it was. Actually, was written for Elvis, but what happened, I know what you're referring to, because you and I speak often off the air. What happened was he had cut I Gotta Know, and it didn't come out for a while.
Who was your co-writer on I Gotta Know?
A fellow named Matt Williams. They called me up to the publisher's office. The publisher was Hill & Range Publishing. And they said, look, you know, I know you know that Elvis has cut your song, but we have a kid that we want to cut it with. I got truly hysterical. I want Elvis. I don't care. I'll wait. I don't care. I want Elvis. Because to me, getting an Elvis record was some sort of a certification that I was a writer. Anyway, it turned out that the kid that I turned down was Fabian, and the session that I got to know probably would have been on was the Turn Me Loose session. So my co-writer was very angry with me until the Elvis record came out. And now it got up to, I think, 14 or something like that on its own, but it was on the back of a monster. It was on the back of Are You Lonesome Tonight. Well, our first check was for $1.5 million sales. Mm. That was unusual. So my co-writer wasn't angry with me anymore.
Get up in the morning, feeling mighty weak, a tossing and a turn. Well, I ain't had no sleep, oh baby, what roads all I'm taking? To romance or heartbreaking? Won't you say which way you're gonna go? I gotta know, gotta know, gotta know. 9 and 9 make 14, 4 and 4 make 9. The clock is striking 13. I think I'm on my mind, you know it's getting aggravating. How long can I keep waiting? Tell me if you love me, yes or no. I gotta know, gotta know, gotta know. Oh, how much I need you. How pity on this heart of mine. Well, if you need and want me to, I'll be your one and only till the end of time. Saw the fortune teller, had my fortune read. She sent me to the doctor, but sent me straight to bed. He said, I'm lonesome and I'm lovesick. I got my mind on lipstick. Will you kiss away my cares and woe? I gotta know, gotta know, gotta know. Oh, how much I need you. How pity on this heart of mine. Whatever you need and want me to, I'll be your one and only till the end of time. Saw the fortune teller, had my fortune read. Send me to the doctor who sent me straight to bed. He said, I'm lonesome and I'm lovesick. I've got my mind on lipstick. Will you kiss away my cares and woe? I gotta know, gotta know, gotta know.
I have to tell you something. Actually, I remember when I first heard, I don't know what radio station it was, but they said, we got a brand new Elvis record, and the first side they played was I Gotta Know, and then the second side they played was Are You Lonesome Tonight, and I didn't know which one was going to be the hit.
Wow.
I Gotta Know didn't do too shabby.
No, it did not.
At any rate, that was I Gotta Know, which could have been a hit record for Fabian, but instead,
yes,
it was a hit record for Elvis.
Yes.
I am Ronnie Allen, and I am talking to Paul Evans, and now we're going to talk about a song called Roses Are Red. Parenthetically, we could add My Love.
Right.
Guess who co-wrote that song?
Yeah.
Paul, tell him.
Well, I did, and I tell you, this sounds stupid. You know, the record probably runs, what, 2 minutes and 50 seconds, something like that?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. I wrote it in 2 minutes and 50 seconds. Sometimes you work so hard and so long on a song till you finally think you've got the world's first perfect pop song, and then nothing happens to it. Nobody records it. Nobody likes it. You're terribly disappointed. In this case, it worked completely the opposite. I was in a little studio called Associated Recording Studios in New York, which was a very, very heavy demo studio. I remember I was doing some demos, and my co-writer came in. His name is Al Byron, and he had a lyric in his hand. He said, "Hey, Paul, take a look at this lyric." So I made a joke to the guys in the studio. I said, "Hey, guys, take five. I'm going to write a hit song now." Seriously, and I was sitting at the piano. I can doodle a little bit on the piano. And Al put the lyric down. As you hear it on the record, by the way, we didn't change anything. He put it down in front of me, and I promise you, Ronnie, I looked at it for 2 seconds, and I went, "A long, long time ago." I wrote the song exactly as you hear it. And then I turned around laughing. I thought it was a funny joke that, you know, you can't write a hit in less than 3 minutes.
Just don't do that.
It's not done that way. That's right. It was done that way on this particular song. I mean, I tried for weeks to make little changes, anything, just so that I could say I worked hard on that song. And I couldn't. We liked it the way we did it. I made a little demo on it. Actually took it up to Epic Records for me. I wanted to cut it. And the producer up there said, "Look, I've got this guy. He's going to get one more chance. I've got to have a hit song for him. I think this is it. Let me cut it with him." Well, you don't argue with a record company producer. So I said, fine. Okay, so he cut the song against the wishes of Epic Records. They didn't like the song. They weren't sure if they wanted to keep Bobby on the label.
The person you're referring to was Bobby Vinton.
That's right. And they didn't like the song, but Bob Morgan begged them, "Look, I love this song. Give him one more chance. This is a hit song." They recorded it, and they didn't want to release it. Anyway, Bobby Vinton was a Pittsburgh boy,
right,
and he hired a model, and he gave her roses, and she went up to every station in Pittsburgh, gave the record, told them to play Roses Are Red, and would give them a rose. And after trying to sabotage this record, it became Epic Records' first million seller.
A long, long time ago, on graduation day, you handed me your book. I signed this way, "Roses are red, my love, violets are blue. Sugar is sweet, my love, but not as sweet as you." We dated through high school, and when the big day came, I wrote into your book, next to my name, "Roses are red, my love, violets are blue. Sugar is sweet, my love, but not as sweet as you." Then I went far away, and you found someone new. I read your letter, dear, and I wrote back to you, "Roses are red, my love, violets are blue. Sugar is sweet, my love, good luck, may God bless you." Is that your little girl? She looks a lot like you. someday some boy will write in her book, two roses are red, my love, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, my love, but not as sweet as you.
Roses Are Red by Bobby Vinton. It was number one on the chart for 4 weeks.
That's right, and I was just in heaven.
You should have been, and you were. And I'm Ronnie Allen, talking with the man who wrote the melody to that song.
I did write the melody to that. It's funny, some songs I write by myself, some songs I write the melody only. I don't think I've ever written just a lyric. I had 4 Elvis records, and each one with a different co-writer. I thought that was weird.
After the Hurricane is a song that didn't become a really big hit record for you, but I love the song.
Well, that song was actually written for Elvis. My manager...
His name was...
We're just not going to say his name. He's a friend of mine, you know, and he meant well. But anyway, we had played it for Elvis's publisher, Al Byron, and I. Al wrote that song with me, too. And they liked it. And when we told my manager, he said, "Oh no! This is going to have to be your record. It's such a great song. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be a hit for you." So he actually, this is hard to say, Ronnie.
Okay.
He actually turned down Elvis.
You mean Elvis would have actually done the song?
I don't know if he would have done it. It would have been presented to him.
That's
it never
far.
Got that far.
So it became a Paul Evans record.
Yeah.
My teardrops were the rain. Your love was wilder than the wind, and twice as hard to tame. My dreams are torn and tattered, but my memories remain. Well, after the hurricane, your eyes flashed like blue lightning. Your lips were thunderbolts. And every time you kissed me, I felt 20,000 volts. But now my heart is shattered like a broken window pane. Yeah, yeah, after the hurricane. Ashes to ashes and dust into dust. Boys are just toys that you play with. Baby, I won't rest until I know why. Everything you touch must wither and die. Well, each time I think about you, I tremble and I shake. You used me, you abused me, then you left me in your wake. To you, it never mattered, but I'll never be the
after the hurricane, Paul Evans.
You know, the end, that little that sound at the end of the record? That is actually the jawbone of an S. Today, of course, it would have been done with a synthesized sound. But we didn't have the option of doing that at that time. There were no synthesizers.
So you heard the real thing.
I guess it was the drummer's idea who probably said, hey, we have to do this one. Listen to this sound at the end of the record. And he did it, and we liked it, so we left it on.
Let's give a shout-out to your website.
Okay, great. Thank you. I do it myself. It's the way I would like people to know me. And there's a lot of stuff like biographies that I wrote myself on there. And it's simple to get to, Ronnie. It's www, of course, .paulevans.com.
You couldn't have made it
simpler. Very simple. And actually, my compilation albums are for sale on there. And they can also read stories. Actually, I have a whole story about what you had to go through to write for Elvis. There's a discography up there. There's a biography on it. And the CDs are listed and what's in them. And you can email me through that site, and I answer all my emails.
When Seven Little Girls, Sitting in the Back Seat, was on the chart in the United States, there was a recording of it in England by the Avons.
They covered my record and they stole it from me, Ronnie.
They stole it. It was like a very similar arrangement, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely was a very similar arrangement, but there's no anger or upset here.
Not at all. The Avons had the hit of Seven Little Girls Sitting in the Back Seat in England, but you kind of got some redemption because you had your own huge hit in England with a very unusual recording called Hello, This is Joni. What's the story about this mysterious record?
The story is disappointing, Ronnie. The story is two songwriters, Fred Tobias and me, Paul Evans, sitting down one day and saying, what shall we write a song about? There's no real special story to it. We just came up with an idea. Telephone answering machines. Well, how can that be possible? But it was. It was about one way that an answering machine could be pretty chilling and mysterious.
Hello, this is Joni. Does that have a subtitle, the answering machine?
Yes, the telephone answering machine.
I just thought I was making that up, but actually I think I had seen that somewhere.
It got to be number 6 in England on the pop charts. In the States, it became number 40-something on the country charts.
Who was the girl on that record?
Her name is Leah Jane Baranotti, and Leah Jane was a very big group singer in Nashville, and we became friends, and that's her. I think she wound up owning a studio down in Nashville, because she did very well, a wonderful girl, and obviously a great singer.
Moving right along to a very interesting record, which I have to say, Paul, as good as this record is, I think it's in dire need of a rewrite. Because you only mentioned about one-third of the people that Willie has sung with.
It's called Willie's Sung with Everyone But Me. And it came about because my daughter, who was a youngster at the time, said to me, Daddy, Willie Nelson sings with everyone, but he never sang with you. Great title, kid.
I had a little dream. I dreamed I sang a song with old Willie. We sang it on TV, and I became a star. And I got that far because I sang duets with old Willie. We were the best of teams, but only in my dreams. And though it breaks my heart, it seems that Willie sung with everyone. Willie sung with everyone. Willie sung with everyone but me. He sung with Jerry, Jeff, Lacey, Jay, and Emmy Lou, Merle Haggard Jr. and a Waylon too, Johnny Cash, Johnny Bush, and Johnny Lee. If my name was Johnny, would he sing with me? Sinead and Willie broke a lot of hearts. Julio and Willie hit the top of the charts. Ryan and Simon and Bobby Bear. Pop or country, Willie doesn't care. Willie's sung with everyone. I bet he's had a lot of fun. Willie's sung with everyone but me. Well, I got me up a scheme when I found old Willie sitting in some barroom. I sat down next to him and I ordered him a beer. Guess he thought it was weird when I cleared my throat and started in a singing. I chose a Willie Nelson song, but I got the words all wrong. And when I turned around, Willie was gone. I cried, Willie, Willie, why did you run? But my career was over before it begun. Willie sung with everyone but me. He sung with a couple of youngs named Farron and Neil, Alabama, asleep at the wheel, Charlie Daniels and David Allen Poe, Webb Pierce, Ray Price, Bill Monroe, Boxcar Willie and the King of the Road, Pretty Dolly Parton and old Hank Snow, Ray Charles, the Possum, the Stuttering Man, Christopherson, Chris, and Cat and Diane, Rodney Crowell and a Brenda Lee. How many singers can there possibly be? Jeannie, Fricky, Joni Mitchell, Bonnie Raitt. I better name them all before it gets too late. It's Johnny Rodriguez and Billy Walker, Randy Travis, Floyd Tillman, Leon Russell, Ronnie Millsap, Kenny Friedman, Bob Dylan, Michael Martin, Murphy, Mary Kay Place, Chet Atkins, Ed Bruce, yeah. Willie's sung with everyone. I bet he's had a lot of fun. Willie's sung with everyone but me. Wait a minute, there's more. There's J.R. Chappell and Hank Cochran, Shirley Collin, Jack Dance, Danny Davis, Steve Brumholz, Johnny Jimbo, there's Larry G. Hudson and Amy Irving, Don Johnson, there's Freddie King and Little Joe, Darryl McCall, Rattlesnake Annie, Bobby Nelson, Tracy Nelson, Susie Nelson, the Family Brown, there's Curtis Potter, the Real Sisters, Jim Reeves and Jenny Wright, Pam Rose, Carlos Santana,
Now, at this point, there's only two people in the world that Willie has not sung with.
You and me.
Just you and me, kid. That's it. We got a couple more records left. Now, this is one that you originally recorded several years ago. It actually made number one on New York City's top country music station, WHN, if I recall.
That's right.
This was done in 1976, the bicentennial, Happy Birthday America.
Right, and we have remastered and changed a couple of lyrics around here and there, because the original lyric talked about 200 years of life, so we had to go in and recut that line. And now it says, let us toast to Independence Day.
In glory and blood, you were battle-born. Your pride's been tatted, your flag's been torn. But you're still a Yankee Doodle Dandy character. Woo! Happy birthday, America. America. England was your father, your mother was a freedom fly, but your father turned his back on you the day that you arrived. So Paul Revere went riding, spread around the news, and while the country
song, Happy Birthday America. Was this a co-write or one that you wrote yourself?
It was co-written with Jimmy Crondes, and Jimmy had written The End for Earl Grant, and he had written the Riddle song. What was it, you know, for Johnny Mathis, I Gave My Love a...
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
That's it. That's the song. What's happened here is that a little label called FSA has picked the record up. They released it for the first time last year, and this year there will be a video that I'll pop onto YouTube.
Great.
Go along with it. I've discovered YouTube, Ronnie.
We want to point out that there's a very successful YouTube video. I'm not going to play it on this particular show, but I invite everybody to go and look for Santa's, what's it called?
Santa's Stuck, we'll get you there, but it's called Santa's Stuck Up in the Chimney. And it's on YouTube because I had an animated version made by somebody who worked for Disney at the time. And that's up on YouTube, and we've gathered a lot of views. It came out for the first time for this past Christmas, and we've gathered over 16,000
views.
So I think maybe next year it becomes even bigger. You know, it's a little bit like Grandma's Got Run Over by a reindeer.
Yes.
It's that kind of a novelty, and I happen to know, because I remember talking to the fellow who did it, he told me it took 8 years to make that record a hit. So I'm hoping we can do it in 4 years. I'd be very happy with that.
Remember, the name of the song is Santa Stuck Up
in the Chimney.
It is, believe it or not, time for us to say our goodbyes right before we play the last recording. Before we get to it, let's talk about Conan O'Brien. What did you do special recently about Conan?
Well, this year has started off great. Robert Gordon, the great rocker from the 70s, was to open the Conan O'Brien show. He had been off the air for a couple of months. And that first show on January 2nd, Robert was the guest, and I put together a little trio, who we wound up calling the Gordonaires, and we did the Conan O'Brien show. I was on television again, you know, it just was a lot of fun. And after we did that, we played B.B. King's Club the next day, January 3rd, did a couple of shows, and for me, it's just, you know, I love the stage. I'm a real cornball. I just love being up on the stage.
Gee, I would have no idea. Just listening to you, you sound like such a shy guy.
Well, you know something? I am, except when it comes to the music business. And if we're talking about the 50s, come on, that was my time.
Well, that's when it started. You didn't just bury yourself in the 50s and say, that's the end. I mean, you just carried on into the 60s. And the
50s. I have, honestly and truly, once I got started in the record business, I have never gotten out of it. And listen, thank you so much. Your interviews are just, I said it before, I'll say it again, they're terrific. They're a lot of fun, I enjoy them, I love being on your show.
Thank you so very much, Paul. I want to wish you a great 2008. And we're going to close with a song that you actually recorded a few years ago. It was called I Was a Part of the 50s.
That's right. It describes my early life in the music business.
Paul, this was a total delight.
Ronnie, it is always a total delight with you.
A part of the 50s, that was a time, but now it's gone. I moved off with Alan Freed when rock and roll was born. Well, it was hot, and if you missed it, you missed a lot. I was a part of the 50s, yes I was, and don't you know that I saw half of Elvis Presley on the old Ed Sullivan show. Can you believe that was 40 years ago? Now, how well I remember Philadelphia, PA, the capital of all the dance parties across the USA. Hey, and I was a part of the 50s. I sang a song that got ahead. I sang seven little girls sitting in the back seat, kissing and hugging with friends. It hit the charts, and forever it will live in my heart. Goodbye, Perry Como, Dinah Shore, and Doris. Hello, little Richard, rock and roll is here to stay. And I was a part of the 50s. I sang a song that got ahead. I sang seven little girls sitting in the back seat, kissing and hugging with friends. It hit the charts, and forever it will live in my heart. I was a part of the 50s. You were a part of it, deep in the heart of it, we feel sorry for you. Whoa, I was a part of the 50s.
We were a part of it too.
If you were a part of it, deep in the heart of it, we feel sorry for you. Oh, shoe up, shoe up, shoe up, shoe up, shoe up, shoe up, shoe up.
Well, that's the show. Now a couple of bonus tracks by happy-go-lucky Paul Evans. This is the first recording that Paul ever released as a single. What do you know?
What do you know? What do you know? What do you know? What do you know? What do you know? What do you know? What do you know? What do you know? Does George love Nancy? Do they walk on air? Is Pete sweet on Susie? Do they still care?
Finally, here's one of Paul's personal favorites, Hushabye Little Guitar.
You've got my baby in a trance, sets the mood up for romance. Thanks for all you've done so far, but hush now, little guitar. Hush-a-bye, little guitar. You played a simple melody. It made her move up close to me. Now I'm swinging on a star. So hush up the little guitar. Hush-a-bye, little guitar. Where would I be without your charm? She wouldn't be here in my arms. Her love is true now, I'm never blue now. I owe it all to you. You've done a fine job up to here, but now's the time to hold her near. If you're the friend I hope you are, you'll hush up the little guitar. Hush up my little guitar. Without your charm, she wouldn't be here in my arms. Her love is true now, I'm never blue now. I owe it all to you. You've done a fine job up to here, but now's the time to hold her near. If you're the friend I hope you are, you'll hush up the little guitar. Hush-a-bye, little guitar. Hush-a-bye, little guitar.